Welcome to the Ed Milet Show. This podcast is for those who want to do more, see more, and be more.
Welcome back to Max Out, everybody. Today is going to be incredible. I got to be honest with you. I've been in a lot of places. I get a chance to travel to some of the most beautiful places in the world, thank God. But I am sitting in one of the most overwhelming buildings I have ever been in my life. I am surrounded by the most unbelievable car collection I have ever seen in my life.
Oh, come on.
No, it's a fact. You know about exotic car collection. I am telling you, it's overwhelming for me. And the cool thing about today is we're going to talk, because you have your dreams too. This is one of this man's dreams. We're going to talk today about tactical steps of how you achieve the picture of your dreams in your life. And imagine this. I'm surrounded by Bugattis and McLarens and all kinds of other cars here. And the gentleman to my left ended up coming here from Iran when he was a little boy. This is a man who was homeless for a while in his life. This is somebody who worked, went from Kmart to this someday. And so today's gonna be an unbelievable story. This man is sort of legendary on Instagram, but he doesn't do a lot of these programs. And so you get to get into the brain and the story of the great Manny Koshman today. So thanks for being here, brother.
My pleasure, brother.
This is so cool. I mean, to be honest with you, we've been here a long time already because I couldn't get ready to sit down and do the show because I was overwhelmed by the cars. So let's start out a little bit, because I think most of my audience, now that they're seeing this scene here and see you, they're like, I've seen that guy before. But I don't know that they know a lot about you and how you got here. And it's a great story. So talk a little bit. Why don't we pick it up about when you were a teenager and how you even ended up in this country. Tell them that story a little bit.
So I'm from Iran. When you reach age 14 in Iran, the army kind of forces you, you know, to go in service. Mm. And most kids that go to service, they get pushed on the mines because they want to save their tanks. At least this is how it used to be a long time ago. So my dad has six brothers and four of them are crippled and two of them passed away from being injured in the war.
No kidding.
So when it was getting close to my 14th birthday, my dad suddenly decided to drop everything and, you know, flee Iran.
Wow.
And with three of my siblings and my parents, obviously, six of us, it was a super brave thing for him to do. I mean, I don't know if I could have the balls to do that.
You know? I don't either. Because one of the reasons too, when people hear these immigration stories too, one of the things that I think people don't know, and I want you to talk about this a little bit too, is oftentimes men like your father have really great careers back home, but their degrees or things like that don't necessarily translate when they come to the United States as well. So they take massive steps backwards financially, don't they? Did that happen with your dad?
100%. Yeah. So my dad was a senior cost accountant for the oil company.
Wow.
And then when the government, you know, the regime changed, he didn't elect a new government. So he moved out of the capital city, which was Tehran, and we moved to a small city named Save. And he opened a small little hardware store and bought a house. So middle class lifestyle. We weren't rich by any means, but you know, he was living comfortably until I got close to my 14th birthday, which he decided to hand everything to his older brother and flee the country. We went to Turkey, and my dad told his brother, sell everything, send me the money. But complications happened that never happened, you know.
So he did all this for you.
Yeah. It's amazing. And I think that's obviously what's been my driver for success. You know, I've always been carrying that burden, you know, carrying the burden that, you know, everybody suffered because of me. And that really turned me into a man early on. You know, at age 14, I was like, I had a lot of, you know, guilt and pressure on me. And when we arrived here, it wasn't easy. Obviously, we had a little over $2,000. My dad was promised a job at the gas station by a friend. And when we arrived at their house, after two nights, the husband and wife got in a fight and they asked us to leave.
Whoa.
So at this point, and you have to realize my sister was 6 months old.
Oh my gosh.
So he's like an infant, you know. And then I was 14, my brother was 12, and my sister is 1 year older, she was 15.
Man.
So we weren't like, you know, we were kids, you know. So it was pretty tough. So we went to a motel, and then my dad called his buddy, said, this is not right. You know, I counted on this job to come here, and now that we don't have a house, and we don't have, you know, I don't have my job either. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, you left me, you know, out cold. So he drove us to his gas station. He used to sell used cars off of his lot.
Yep.
So my dad bought a 1972 Datsun station wagon. And that became our house for a while.
It became your house for a while.
Yes.
Yeah. So I want to just say, I want everybody to be picturing this, because it's so cool when we end up getting to where you've arrived to, but where you come from. So your dad leaves Iran, you end up going to Turkey, you come here, he's got a job and a place to live. 2 days later, he has neither.
Yep.
Right? And you end up then living in the Dotson as a family, all these people that you just described?
Yes. Oh yes, because my dad realized if we stay at the motel, we're going to run out of money.
Oh my God.
So my dad's like, okay, this is not going to, you know, he's an accountant. He can do the math.
Right, he can do the math. Wow.
He's like, so yeah, that was a, you know, dark period of my life. But I think I turned all that into motivation, you know. Everything that's happened to me, I've had lots of my, you know, down points in life. And you got to either, you know, let it break you or make you, you know.
You made it make you. But when you're 14, I mean, obviously there had to be tremendous anxiety for
Absolutely,
you.
Absolutely, because I didn't speak a word of English.
Oh, I wouldn't. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I was walking by the pool when we were at the motel for a few days. And there was a little boy walking by and give me the bird, you know, give me the finger. And I didn't know. I patted him. And then there was a teenager came over. He goes, no, that's not good.
No, you had no idea.
I had no idea what's the, you know, he was flipping me off.
Did your dad speak English?
Yeah, he was educated in, you know, America years back from oil company. He was, you know, traveling back and forth, and he had traveled abroad. And so he spoke English, but that's about it. You know,
one of the amazing things for me doing the show, because I grew up middle, I don't know if you call it lower middle class or middle class, I'm not sure, right? But one of the things that amazes me is the disparity of backgrounds of people that win, that
it's
are successful.
So wide.
It's so wide, man. Yeah. And then, but for years, it's one of the, you are one of the great American success immigration stories.
Thank you.
And one of the reasons I do the show is, you know, there's these different faces of immigration you see on TV all the time. And I put different faces of all different types of people. But when it comes to immigration, I just want you all to picture this. I mean, and obviously this still exists to this day, the discrimination of people that come from different countries or different religious backgrounds. Mm-hmm. But I got to admit, I got to figure that finger you got was not the only form of negativity you got. Did you get often bullied or pushed around or teased, etc., as a kid just because you were from Iran?
Oh, 100%, yeah. I mean, back then, you know, the hostage situation was still kind of
pretty fresh.
Yep, in people's minds. So, you know, I got called all kinds of names, you know, camel rider, you know, sand. You figure out the second word.
Yeah, second part, right? There's like a Stater Brothers parking lot around here that you still drive by to this day, isn't there?
In Costa Mesa, yes.
And so you've driven by that Stater Brothers or into that parking lot in your Bugatti or in your McLaren today, but you were in a different car there for a different reason back then. Just tell them that really quick. I want you all picture this in his head.
Yeah, so 1985 is when we arrived here, and we used to park the 1972 station wagon in that shopping center because, you know, we didn't want to drive around. So that's where we drive, and we used to buy bananas every day. That was our source of food because it was the cheapest source of food.
Incredible.
You know, and my dad used to walk over and get the newspaper every day, look for the help wanted section to look for a job. After a few weeks, he was able to secure a job. Not far away as an accountant. And then after 2 weeks after that, he got his first paycheck. We were able to secure an apartment and moved into a two-bedroom apartment in Costa Mesa.
In Costa Mesa. So that entire family was in a two-bedroom apartment.
Yes.
It's incredible, brother. I just love it. So one thing I want to talk about today as we start the transition into the story, everyone, is you and I were talking about this off camera. You know, not everything you did worked. The incredible thing is also to have done well in sales as part of your career with the deficiency of the language barrier is another incredible thing. So there's all kinds of stuff this person's overcome. And when you're listening to this, you're driving in your car, you're watching this on YouTube, what's your excuse? We both started hustling as entrepreneurs or trying to do something very young. And there's this thing on social media today. It's like, hey, don't worry about your 20s or your teens. You know, you'll get around to it. And you may need to have patience those years, but you should be after it. Don't you agree with that?
100%. 100%. I think, you know, what builds you, your mentality, your mindset, when you do that in your early teens or 20s, is a lot different than when you're 40 and 50 trying to do that. It's very, what do they call it? It's very tough to teach a dog new habits.
Yeah, right, an old dog, new tricks.
New tricks. So because, you know, your mentality is built, developed, and then it's very difficult to change that at age 40, 50.
It is.
So it's very important early on, you know, to try to challenge yourself, You know, be like a sponge, you know, always look up for to meet new friends. You know, I mean, if you find somebody that's had a successful business for 20 years, you like that business, find three other guys like him, and now you got 60 years worth of experience and you're still in your 20s.
It's a fact. You know? I agree with you. And that's what social media can do too. Following the 100%. Different people. That, make sure you follow the right people. It's one of the reasons Manny's on my show. This is a real American entrepreneur story. In multiple businesses, he's been successful too. And I kind of feel like, you know, I feel like, you know, when you're young, you don't have those other, but those of you that are 40 or 50, listen, what do you have? Yeah. You've got experience. You're probably better at dealing with people than he and I were when we were 16. You have your advantages too, but those of you that have young people in your life, in your business, in your family, encourage them to be watching this because you see two 48-year-old guys now, but we're gonna now let you see the 16-year-old in Manny's case, right? So you started the hustle at about 16, did you not?
How old about were you? 14.
14, we'll go back. So what were you doing at 14?
So we moved to the two-bedroom apartment, and then every time I took the trash out, I realized people leave stuff by the trash can. I'm like, why is this thing next to a dumpster? You know, it's a nice chair and a table and or a toaster. So I figured, hey, they probably bought a new one, they don't want it. So I would, you know, haul those back to my patio, you know?
You're kidding me.
No, and then by the weekend, we've had a full patio worth of furniture. And we got a swap meet. We rented a space at swap meet across the street, which was Orange Coast College. And we started with one space, and then it turned out to be three spaces. I expanded my business. You know, I was 14.
At 14?
Yeah. So I used to get up early in the morning, like 4 in the morning, and go to all the, you know, dumpsters and pick up stuff. You know, I started with my own apartment complex where we used to rent.
Yeah.
Then I realized, hey, why don't we go, you know, over there, walk over to the next complex. And then, hey, I was making, you know, $1,000 a month at 14 to 16 because I didn't have a work permit yet. So that was my first business. You know, picking, it's cost of goods is free, right? So you pick up stuff and then sell at swap meet. The space, I think, was $10 a space to rent, so it's nothing.
I think some successful people do a lot of things well unconsciously. And it's not until you make them talk about themselves. Even someone is, one of the things I love about you is your humility and how humble you are.
Thank you.
It's true, because for a guy who's got all this showy stuff, as a person, he's incredibly humble, tons of humility. And we're both that way in the sense that we're both even a little bit introverted too, right? It's interesting. We drive in these cars where people notice us, but privately we're both pretty introverted guys. Yeah. But you do things well that you take for granted. Not every 14-year-old was getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and was thinking about being an entrepreneur by then. So this is the journey. These are the thoughts of somebody who becomes successful. Then what happened? Is that when you, was it after that you got the job at Kmart? Was it somewhere around that time?
Yes, so my first legal job was Kmart. I was pushing shopping carts, cleaning the floors. Mm-hmm. I was a stock boy number 407. I never forget.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I was pushing shopping carts. So I excelled at it so well, I got promoted to assistant manager of sporting goods after under a year. But even then, I knew that's a stepping stone for me. I don't want to be working at Kmart. You know, I want to make lots of money. You know, I had a vision, a much bigger vision. But I realized I got to start somewhere. I got to learn the language. I still didn't speak fluent English. So I was always getting the newspaper, just like my dad did early on, looking for better, you know, opportunities. So I found this company, WWI, Worldwide Industries. It says earn, you know, $1,000 a week. I'm like, wow, I'm only making $100 a week. Yeah. That's 10 times, you know? Right. So I called them, and it was, of course, it was a multi-level marketing sales, and it was a door-to-door sales. You sell nuts. Sometimes, you know, they buy closeouts, like knife sets.
Yeah.
And at the time, they were selling nuts, you know? So I went and I quit my job at Kmart. I went working for WWI, and after 3 months, I became their top salesman. Mm. And one day, I'm shopping with my dad at Price Club. Back then, it was on Costco, you know, Price Club, and I did a quick math. I'm like, hey, these cashews are £3 for $3. That's $1 a pound. These guys are selling it to me for $2.50 a pound, you know? So I have all my customers. Why do I need these guys? So I immediately started looking for a 8-inch polyester bag and a sealer, you know? And I, within a week, I quit my job there, and I went to business by myself, selling nuts.
You basically made your own one that you were already a member of.
Exactly, yeah. So my company was called Unlimited Wholesale Products, and I was 18 at the time.
Man.
Now I'm 18. So I'm still in high school, finishing my high school. I was driving a 1983 Honda Accord with a nice boombox in the back.
It was always about the car, even back then.
I love cars, you know. So I started making good money. I was used to go to payphones and put, you know, make $1,000 a week, and then you tear your phone number in the bottom. So I had 40 employees by the time I was 18 and a half, close to 19, making $4,000 or $5,000 a month. I had a small little office in Stanton in Orange County. And then one day I was waiting for my hamburger and I had a basket of my nuts, you know, right by me. Mm. And I said, hey, you know, let me try to sell some nuts while I wait for my hamburger.
Right.
So I pitched this guy and he bought 3 bags for $10. And then he happened to be the health inspector for Orange County Health Department. So he was at my doorstep the next morning. Mm. Goes, hey, I checked my files. We don't see a health permit. I'm like, what health permit? I don't know. What is a health permit?
Right. Right.
I don't know what he's talking about. I thought he was so happy he wants to come buy a box. So he gave me a big packet, all the requirement. I took it home. Me and my dad read it. My dad says, oh, this, you know, office is not going to qualify. It needs a lot of money. You know, you got to change the paint, carpet. You know, it needs to be a food facility. You know, so I was forced to close my business down. And by then I had $20,000 saved.
Wow.
Yeah. I was 19 at the time. And my dad's friend, he was a broker selling gas stations and businesses. And he goes, you know, you guys could buy a gas station with the SBA loan, 10% down. And I don't know what he was doing, but he was obviously a fraud because all my money was gone. I had to write a check for loan processing, this, that. My loan never came together and I lost all my money.
You lost everything.
Yep. The only good thing came out of it, the $3,500 out of the $20,000 I put up in that savings that I had to spend was for Mobil Oil Corporation. I went to Rancho Cucamonga for 2 weeks. So I became a Mobil dealer. I have that plaque.
Without the gas station.
Without the gas station,
right?
Yeah.
So you got the plaque out of it. So it was a $20,000 plaque.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was super depressed. Mm. I'm back to a square one. I got no money and I was super depressed. So one of the shops I used to sell nuts to, it was in Montebello. It was a Winston Tire Shop.
Okay.
And this guy, Ruben Padilla, was the manager.
You
he loved
the name.
Me. He used to buy a lot of cashews from me. So anyway, I called him. I said, Ruben, you know, I lost all my money. I lost my nut business. I had to they shot me down. This guy conned me, took all my money.
Sheesh.
And then he goes, I'll give you a job. So he made me assistant manager. So I started working for Winston Tire. I used to drive from Orange County to Montebello every day, get up 5 in the morning. There's a lot of traffic.
Tons of traffic, everybody that doesn't live here.
Yeah, so I did that for 2 years. That store became one of the top sales after out of 170 stores Winston Tire had. And they were gonna promote me to a manager and move me to a location that was doing poorly. But I'm like, I don't wanna be back to Kmart. I don't wanna be a manager you know, and work for somebody else. And after that, I was just searching for more successful friends.
Yes.
Because I want to get out of this circle.
So here's a key. You were searching for more successful friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
I met this guy. He's driving a Porsche Cabriolet, wearing a Brioni suit. I'm like, whoa, what does that guy do?
Yeah.
I got to find out what he's doing.
Yeah.
So I found that he has a mortgage company and a real estate company. And we had a mutual friend. And I said, hey, you know, I want to get out of Winston Tires. And he goes, hey, I love your drive. You got fire in you, you know, I want to hire you as a loan processor.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked for him for 6 months. I learned everything in loan business and I found a broker to partner up with because you have to be a broker to open your own. So after 7 or 8 months, I opened my mortgage company.
Okay, stay in here for a second. Yeah. I want to go back just for a second. I want to stay right in here because there's lessons I want to point out.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is by the time this guy is 22 or 23 years old, I want you to think about this. From the swap meet business, right, to the nut selling business, to your own business and the nut selling business.
Yep.
Just think through all of this, you guys, to being scammed and losing. I want you to see yourself in this story on the gas station, to working at the tire store, to then working in the mortgage business, to then becoming an entrepreneur in the mortgage business. So there's some success leaves clues. Number one, he's relentless and resilient. No matter what it was, no matter who hurt him, he's constantly trying to move up in the world, everybody. There's no excuse, right? There's no story. It doesn't matter that you got scammed. It doesn't matter your boss isn't any good. He's acquiring skills. He's working his way up in the world through every single one of these steps. And he didn't let these letdowns, they hurt. He's not telling you about when he went home with the $20,000 getting stolen and was crying and upset, but when he came back, right? So, but the other thing for those of you that have jobs, he was constantly looking for how to own what he was doing.
I was climbing the mountain.
Yes.
You know, you got to climb the mountain, yeah.
And you can't pour the water down the mountain if you're not at the top, right?
Exactly.
That's your thing. You think I don't listen to your content. So
I left a lot out too. I at some point before the nut business, I went and worked for LA Times.
Jeez.
So I used to go sell back then they had the front pages, the big books they used to give it to you for free. So I used to knock on doors They used to drop me off at an intersection and say, I pick you up in 3 hours at, you know, 5 blocks, right? Mm. So I used to knock every single door. Hey, you know, we have a special front pages gift if you sign up for subscription. Mm. And that was a tough, you know, selling all these things. I mean, I still think I suck at sales, but it still teaches you to communicate, break that fear barrier. Sometimes you're a little bit shy. I'm still shy, you know?
Yeah.
But still, it teaches you a lot when you interact with people.
Yes.
Because every single door I knock was different.
Yep, and I think, you know, everything is sales. Everything is persuasion. I mean, even today what we're doing is a form of sales. When we went around and you described the cars to me, it's kind of a form of sales.
True.
It's sort of a form
Very
of it's a form of communicating. Not enough people put themselves in these like incredible, uncomfortable situations.
Yeah.
But when, see, that story is normal to you, but for the people listening or watching this, like, whoa, by the time this guy was 24 years old, he'd done a lot of stuff, like multiple lifetimes of stuff. Here's what I want everyone to be equating. Look at him and put hustler. Hustler, right? Hustler. Right. This dude outworked everybody. There's a lesson here. Hustle, 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 regardless of the results, right?
Yeah, the sad part is everybody thinks I was lucky.
Yeah.
What part of the story so far you think I was lucky?
There was no luck in there.
And then I even got my insurance license because I heard this guy was, you know, driving a Mercedes and he's an insurance broker. I'm like, wow. That's so before mortgage, I got into insurance too. So I'm like, I told my partner that was my broker, and he said, hey, you know, business is slow. I'm going to venture off into something else. You want to come? He's like, okay, I'm with you.
Okay.
Yeah, I was nice. You know, I don't want to like you. So we opened a 79-cent store. So first a store that was below 99 cents, you know, and that was 10,000 square feet. Yeah. So I was always thinking out of the box. You know, you got to come up with something different, right?
Yep.
So we did that. That was great. But by 97, Food for Less opened right next to us. And then my sales went down 50% on their grand opening, on the first day they opened. Mm. So it went down and I'm like, whoa, where is everybody in my store? And everybody's over there. And so I start putting money back into the supermarket. Mm. And after 2 years, I was negative net worth.
I after lost 2 years, negative everything.
Negative. Mm. So I sold my house. I had two cars. I have a Lexus. I had a Mercedes 500 SL. Sold those. All my friends, family, said, just file bankruptcy. You know, in this country, it's okay. You know, people file bankruptcy and then you build your credit back up 3-4 years. I'm like, no, bankruptcy is like, to me, is death.
Mm.
Because by then I had a mortgage company, right? Mm-hmm. I knew credit's the most important thing. I'm underwriting all these people's loans.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for late fees, collections, FICO scores, you know. I said, no, that to me, I'd rather die before I file bankruptcy. I'm like, I'm losing money anyway. Why don't I just lose more money, get the volume up? So I ran a full page ad in La Opinion, which is their Mexican newspaper. And it was expensive, but I'm like, you know, I'm losing 10 grand a month anyway. Let's just make 20 grand a month. I'll just, you know, delay my vendors a little bit, you know, shuffle money around.
And
that's what I did. Within a year, I sold the business. I almost doubled the sales and two Korean guys bought it and for $185,000.
You got out.
I got out, but I owed 180 grand on my credit cards. So I was still negative net worth, but I wasn't negative net worth. I mean, by the time I paid all my accounts payable, I was probably washed.
What you did that's a common trait of people that are successful is they don't need to know everything before they jump in, before they take action. And for a lot of people that are watching this, what's held them back is they have this thing in their mind, there's this threshold. Once I know enough, then I'll go sell. Once I know enough, then I'll go start the business. Once I know enough, once the risk is limited. And I'm not saying don't learn things, but you'll always be waiting.
Yep. And you never pull that trigger. Yeah.
So how did you, by the way, there's a guy now owns all kinds of different businesses, immensely successful in the real estate business, 2 million
Thank
plus
you.
2 million square feet of commercial square feet that this man owns now. When did the break happen?
When I was trying to sell my supermarket, I worked 12 hours and then I used to go to 24-hour fitness, run on the treadmill.
Mm.
And guess what I was telling myself? I'm gonna sell the supermarket. I'm gonna file bankruptcy.
Wow.
So I sold the supermarket, then I started doing day trading. I turned that to $600,000+. I took the money out September 1999. All my friends told me, you're crazy.
Mm.
You know, they were making a couple of million bucks on AOL stock alone, some of my friends, because that split 3-4 times.
Mm.
And I took the money, I left 80 grand in there. I took $600,000 out. I went and bought two homes and a shopping center with it. And guess who helped me? Mr. Williams.
Oh.
I called Mr. Williams, my landlord, and he put me in touch with his broker. He goes, help this young man and show him what you would show me to buy. And then I started my real estate investments.
That was the beginning. It's interesting, man. life is so interesting because in hindsight, everything happens for us, not to us.
All
of our failures, as long as you believe that, right? And so it's incredible to me to think, it's ironic, but the swap meet business that stopped, that turns into, you know, all these other things, from the nut business to the newspaper business to the tires to the mortgages to the gas station to the 79-cent store, all of that led you to Williams, which leads you to this breakthrough in your life. It's like, that's why you have to keep driving down the road of your life, everybody, because there's the point where it all adds up. And then when you win, I have mine too, I go, that was why it all happened for me.
Exactly. And people call that luck. Mm-hmm. It's no luck, you know? I never give up. I keep trying. And if you just take action, and I made a recent post on my Instagram, saying, if you can't figure out what you want to do in life, don't worry about it. Just do what's in front of you right now, right?
Yes.
And then, but with the vision of this is a stepping stone, and always be on the lookout for a better opportunity. So just be active, you know, because if you're sitting around constantly asking people, oh, you know, what's the next business? Oh, if this business is bad, I'm gonna wait for this guy to come from Korea. He may have a better business for me. And you're just sitting around doing nothing. You're idling. If you're idling, you're not going nowhere. Trust me.
Would you tell them what your rule was for buying the first Bugatti? Like what you had to have in your possession before you would buy one? Do you remember talking about that before?
Yeah, I told myself I would only buy an expensive car. It wasn't a Bugatti. Okay. You know, if I go buy 10 of them cash, I would go buy one.
Okay.
You know, but my
once you could buy 10 cash, if you could buy 10 of them cash, then you'd buy one.
Yes, but my golden rule was I would never spend principal. You know, I invested in real estate and I had well over $20 million in real estate when I bought my first supercar, which was 2005. I bought an F40, Ferrari F40, for $325,000. Of course, I paid cash for it, and I just got my dealer's license because I wanted to accumulate, you know, a lot of exotic cars. My neighbor was an exotic car dealer. He goes, you should get your dealer license because you may get tired of it, you want to sell it, and it's a good business, you can make money. I'm like, okay. So I got my dealer license, and I didn't know my insurance doesn't cover my cars. I have to get a special insurance, right? So anyhow, long story short, I had a mishap with a car, and I lost the car.
Yeah,
I took it for a spin, and I didn't know it's an old car. You got to warm up the tires and gearbox, and the gearbox locked, and I hit a tree.
But oh my goodness!
Luckily, nothing happened, and nobody was involved. It was just me. But it was a expensive lesson.
So there's lessons here, though. You're talking about a very wealthy man here who's not used debt to acquire the toys of his life. He's used debt to grow his net worth, which I think is a significant tip, number one.
Yeah.
And then I'm curious about you. I want to go into you here for a second. What do you, you said I had big visions and dreams. And I think people say that often. But when you were like 23, 24, if you wouldn't mind showing them this, I think people right now, you're going to begin to see what having a real dream and a real plan looks like and how life is incredible. So I know a lot of you think, yeah, I got plans and visions. I always tell people, how specific are you? Is it written down? How often do you review it?
So that's the most important thing.
Can we please, because this is going to be, unbelievably revealing for people. Show them a little bit about what this is here.
Yeah, so Manny, this was my vision, my dream book or vision board, if you want to call it. I drew this in 1994 or 95, and back then I was 23 years old.
So 1994-ish, you're 24 years old, roughly.
Yes, 23.
Okay, 23 years old. This is what he drove out of his vision. So show him, just describe a little bit, because there's audio listening to this as well.
Sure.
Right, sure.
So it's a big mansion with lots of palm trees. And it's got a four-car garage. There's a Mercedes parked in there, Lexus, a Ferrari, and a Diablo, a Lamborghini.
A Lambo. Unbelievable, right? Yeah.
And back then, I still dreamed of cars, you know, expensive cars. But the funny thing is, my house now is double lot. It has, I think, 10 or 12 palm trees. King palm tree is huge. And it has a huge pool in the backyard like this.
You guys.
And it has a staircase, I'm not kidding you, identical to this.
It's
like, I get goosebumps.
I do too. This is almost spooky, and we're feeding in footage on YouTube that you all can see his home. But he drew this as a young man when he had no money. This is during the phase that you just heard him describe earlier with all these setbacks. He's still dreaming, he's still envisioning. This is unbelievable to me how much it looks like your life.
Yeah, so I used to write my profit loss statement, how much I owe on credit cards, how much my store is doing. This is when I owned the supermarket. And this is October 1994. So I was 23 years old.
My gosh.
And aside from business, writing financial plans, I even...
Detailed financial notes
yeah,
here, guys.
Yeah, I even drew my future wife.
Look at this.
So this was 1995.
You guys.
I drew this, and doesn't this look like my wife
it
now?
It looks like Layla. It looks like Layla. So you guys, we're putting a picture up on the screen right now. Those of you listening to audio, there's a woman he sketched here that if she were missing right now, this would be the sketch they'd use to find her. It's unbelievable how identical it is. His life he drew up and over, he was on a, he's only done a couple shows. He was on this show recently and he talked about this. We were like, you didn't really have these plans.
Yeah, so I spent 2 hours looking for it because it really bothered me. A lot of people commented, oh yeah, you made up, you know, all this story about the picture. Where's the picture? I'm like, I'm gonna go find it.
There's the picture. So you guys, these are the things successful people do. Like, I'm weird. Like, to this day, I'm on my plane, or before that when I didn't have a plane, I love sketching out dreams. I love writing out, I call them possibility projections.
Yep.
What's possible?
And I'd write them out. You're programming yourself. Your subconscious is working in the back, and then a few years later, maybe 10 years later, you're like, you have that same thing. But I didn't even know I drew this picture of this woman until I found this book. I'd forgotten.
See,
isn't that funny?
You're on another key, which you're going to point to. He's pointing to his head, by the way, about the unconscious, right? So I have the same experience. I just want to say this to you. It's incredible to me how many of the things I dreamed about and messaged to myself
and became reality.
And that by like with you. But then there was a point where I had forgotten about them. But it was in that unconscious mind, my subconscious. So while I consciously forgot about it, my subconscious and unconscious didn't, and I worked towards materializing these things. And I've done the same thing. I've looked back at plans. I'm like, whoa, I forgot I even wanted that.
Yeah.
Isn't that an amazing feeling
for
you?
It's amazing, yeah. One of the reasons I'm getting on this social media platform, because I like to share my story as much as I can, because I know there's a lot of 14-year-olds out there that maybe immigrant or even, you know, born here, that they take their freedom for granted and they're not really striving to better themselves.
Yeah. You know? Well, I want you all to be following Manny on his Instagram. How do they find you?
Manny Koshman, just my name.
We'll put it up on the screen on YouTube. By the way, one of the cool things about Manny's social media is it's visually appealing too, because you're going to see beautiful places and beautiful cars and beautiful people. But the other thing too that you do that I like is that you're going to start to help people turn their dreams into something real as well, right?
Yes.
So talk a little bit about this. You've got a couple books that you've written, and then there's an ebook as well. So just tell them a little bit about this. The ebook's really interesting to me because you're doing that for free.
Yes. So this book is going to be an ebook, and this is a simple short book that's going to tell you how I made my first $1 million. And my first book that I came out with was back in 2011. And this was how to build your $100 million real estate portfolio. And this is Manny Koshman's Contrarian Playbook, how to make your first $100 million real estate portfolio. It's a little bit more advanced, and that's why I got the free ebook for you. My latest book is called Driven, and this covers more of my bio and family and my journey. So you can get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
My sense of meeting you is like, I get it. I get it. I understand it. I knew we'd be really good friends, and I think you said the same thing. Like, I just knew. But what I love about you, one of the things I love is, I just did a video about this recently, about just like really hungry. Like really hungry. And what makes people really unique is they maintain that fire and hunger as they're succeeding. Mm-hmm. So when I look at you, I see a guy who's got life momentum. Like you said, I want to be rich, but I don't want to be this rich. That's because every level you got to, you got hungrier.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Yet most people, when they get to a different level, and everyone listening to this should be, whether that's that next promotion or a little bit more money or a certain amount of savings,
they get
or the
complacent.
House, they do.
Yeah. They get comfortable, you know, and I say when you get comfortable is when you stop growing, you know, and when you stop growing, you know, it's, you're not being, you know, productive in life.
Do you, can we talk cars for a minute?
Sure.
Because people listen to be like, you didn't ask this dude about cars. Yeah. Like, how do you, so the difficult question is, these are probably like children in some sense for
you.
Yes, all
they're
of these
my
different,
second family.
They're literally gonna say, do you ever come in here and just talk to them?
No.
I'm just kidding. So has there been, everybody, this is so cool right now. Has there been a favorite? Are you allowed to say that? Like, has there been?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, favorite in sense of, you know, different aspects of the car, like driving, design. Mm-hmm. My favorite daily driving car, or on a track or on the street, you know, it's a P1, McLaren P1.
Okay.
That one gives me the most thrill, you know. You know, a car is a perfect balance of design and performance, in my view. And in terms of detail and design and uniqueness, I would say the Pagani here, this one is like the Picasso on wheels, you know. And every little stitch is all, you know, done by hand at the Hermes factory.
Oh.
So it's kind of like having, you know, 150 Birkins in one car, you know.
Yeah.
All that detail work that goes in it. And then in terms of power and just sign of success, I would say Bugatti.
Yeah.
You know, Bugatti is the most luxury.
How many Bugattis have you owned?
Three.
Three. And you've got two currently.
I got two and I got one coming.
Yeah, you got a real one coming too. Can you tell them a little about that or not?
Sure.
Yeah.
So that
you
one is
listen
been,
to this.
Yeah. So the Bugatti, I got Hermes designers and Bugatti together, and we've designed a one-off interior and exterior color on a Bugatti Chiron, 1500 horsepower. And that's going to be finishing in production probably September, October this year. So it's going to be 4 years by the time I get the car.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's a long time to wait. And a lot of people say, why don't you just, you know, I could have had the first Bugatti probably in California. I put my deposit, you know, one of the first guys I put a deposit on a Chiron. But I told him, look, I want something super unique. I want a one-off. And this one's a one-off. It actually has, it says one of one, dressed by Hermes. Oh. So it's got unique seats, unique interior, obviously all the leather hand-stitched by Hermes, painted wing by Hermes horses. So yeah, it's gonna, I get excited about that car.
You show me pictures. I mean, yes. I'm excited for that car. I am going to sit in the passenger seat of that car.
100%.
At least for 2 miles.
We're gonna go for a lot of rides.
I can't wait, brother. I can't wait. So, and then there seems to be a fascination with McLarens to me.
Yes.
So what's the story with you and McLarens?
Well, I have five SLR McLarens. I like...
you're driving in your car right now. Did you already just said, I have five SLR McLarens?
So. Well, that to me is I look at these as investments as well. Mm-hmm. I want people to know that, you know, I'm not just going out and buying every car I think it's cool.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very strategic. Mm-hmm. I have a passion for cars, but also it's a lot of money. You know, I have almost $35 million in cars with the cars that are coming in. Yeah. So I got $17 million worth of cars coming in, and I have about $18 to $20 million right now here. So that's a lot of money to park. I don't care how much money you have.
Of course.
A lot of money because these cars are expensive to maintain. You know, a Bugatti, you know, oil change is $24,000. You know, I just changed shocks on this car. It was $130,000.
$130,000. So you could buy a Ferrari or you could change the shocks on a Bugatti.
On a Bugatti. Yep.
Everybody's starting to hear this?
Yeah. Tires on a Bugatti are $38,000 for a set of tires. And they recommend every 2 years for you to change it. Mm. So you add that times three Bugattis. That's a lot of tires.
You know what's cool? I want everyone to hear this because there's people like me and you and a lot of the people listen like, wow, they're car people or they love hearing about this because you can't even get close to these kinds of things. But I see something even more. I see happy people find passions. Yours happens to be an incredibly expensive. Your passion could be painting. Your passion could be the ocean. Your passion could be knitting. I mean, it could be anything. Yeah. It could be, but life is about finding that thing that you love, right? And like, your face changes when you talk about Layla, Enzo, Priscilla,
and the cars. Yeah.
Isn't it true?
Very true,
it's really true. Was there any element for you? People have asked me this about like, my homes or my jet and stuff. And one of the reasons I want the people that do want to be financially successful to listen to this part of it is, for me personally, when I first started to get a couple nice things, and I'm not saying, by the way, remember what he said earlier, he could write a check for 10 of them before he'd write a check for one of them. So you don't ever do this prematurely because the worst thing in the world is to have a nice thing and have pressure to pay for it.
Absolutely,
Do you agree with that?
Yeah. It takes all the fun out of it. You know, when you can't sleep at night.
It does, right? I think it does. I've been there where I got something prematurely and I couldn't even enjoy it because of the pressure of being able to pay for it. So wait, everybody. But on the other hand, I want to ask you this. For me, the first couple nice things, whether it was my first nice suit or, you know, the first Mercedes I bought that I could afford, I think it helped me be more successful. And people don't ever talk
about
this.
Absolutely,
I started to think like a richer man.
Yes,
just
absolutely.
Touching the dream. Did that happen to you?
100%, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's all about building your mindset, your, you know, your self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you see self-improvements, not even just with cars, with your own body, you know, when you go work out, do you feel better when you come out of the gym all pumped up? Yeah. Or do you feel better when you haven't worked out for a month? Yeah. Of course, you know, you, when you go to the gym, you know, you're building your, you know, something happens when you see changes in your body, with your assets, when you see even gaining a good friend. I have my down days, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you do too. We're all human, you know.
Yep.
You could have all the money in the world. You're still going to have a bad day. You know? Absolutely. You don't know what's going to cause it, but, you know, you do. And, you know, for me, working out is great. I have a personal trainer 3 times a week. And then when I don't have my personal trainer, I just get out of bed and drop on the floor and do 20 push-ups, 30 push-ups. I do it until I can't do it anymore. Mm. And then I hit the shower and I feel great, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's just keeping the fluids going, you know, your mind fresh.
Yeah.
Because workout not just improves your physics, it also helps your mind.
Agreed.
Know? And sometimes it helps your mentality more than your physique, but people don't realize it, you know. Mm. It helps you focus, you know.
A couple more questions. Yep. If it all went away.
No big deal. Yeah. I mean, I'm actually, sometimes I get excited to struggle again. Yeah, isn't that crazy?
No,
yeah.
It's not crazy.
Yeah, I like suffering sometimes, you know, I miss it.
Oh, bro. You know what you are? You're like this dispensary of gems that you don't even know you're dispensing. You just said something that's a common trait, brother. Yeah. And that is, if it went away, I'm okay. That's a real entrepreneur. Second one is, I kind of enjoy suffering.
Yeah.
I think that all successful people, you know, you have a relationship where you guys know Kobe. And so without getting any more than that, he enjoyed the suffering.
Absolutely.
I think when you accept you're going to have to suffer, almost the hard part's over with once you accept that that's part of it. Don't you think?
Yeah, you're already winning. Mm-hmm. You know, it just hasn't happened yet.
Oh, wow. It's so good, brother.
Yeah.
So it's so good. So I guess last question, if someone was fortunate enough to get to do what I did today, and they were an entrepreneur, I don't care if they're a 65-year-old entrepreneur, since I've been, man, I heard what Ed said earlier about renting my life, I want to own my life again. But maybe they're not ever going to be an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, they're 20 years old, but they'd like to become one. They've never been one before. They said, I'd like to turn my life around. Mm-hmm. I'd love to walk in somewhere, my own building that you own here, and have all these cars, or have my version of heaven.
Sure.
But I'm a little bit lost right now. Would you send them back to that notepad of yours? What would your advice be? If they could get 2 minutes with Manny Koshman, what would he say to them in order to turn their life around? What would your advice be to them?
Well, first of all, work out. Start working out. Mm. Build your mindset. Write your goals down. I mean, what's your long-term vision, right? Mm. I mean, you can't travel across the country in the dark. You know, you gotta know where you wanna go, right? Mm. And so writing your goals down, start working out, improving your physique, your mind. Get knowledgeable, surround yourself with new set of friends that can teach you something new. Mm. But at the end of the day, gear up to invest in real estate. Mm. Doesn't matter what trade you're in. Mm. You know, you wait for recessions, when something drops 40%, buy it.
Yeah.
You know, and just wait. It's gonna come back up, that 40%. You just made 40%, it's just not now. Just wait, you know, 4 or 5 years. You already made it. You make your money on the buy, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's my first book I wrote, yeah. So I made all my money in recessions. I mean, I don't enjoy this upswing we've had. It's been very depressing for me because I make my money in recessions. Everything you see that in real estate I've accumulated, it's been, you know, the building you're sitting in here, I bought this in 2011. Mm. It was bank owned, boarded up. Mm-hmm. I bought it from Wells Fargo for $3.1 million or $3.3 million. Right. It's worth triple that.
It's worth triple. And by the way, without saying the location, would you tell me about that one building that was possibly a third time for you? Would you mind sharing that story?
So there was a high-rise building I bought in 2005, two high-rise buildings in 2005. I bought in Houston for $34 million. I bought it for $27 million, sold it for $34 million in 2007. And then I bought it back from mortgage servicers in 2011. And I sold it in 2014 for $36 million. Mm. And again, it's getting foreclosed, so I may buy it for the third time.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
I wonder if it's in Gareth's World booked for the same guy to buy the same building 3 times.
That would be unbelievable, right? I think there's so many gems and so many tips today. You've just said so many things that fascinate me. But the thing that fascinates me the most about you, brother, is when I walked in here, because I knew a little bit of the story, to think a young man from Iran ends up coming here and in a couple weeks is living in a car with his family. Do you not see the metaphor of this? You lived in a car and now...
And now I got, all this. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's why I'm, you know, hoarding these cars. But yeah, that's funny because that was my first home, and I am emotionally attached to some of these cars, but again, you know, at the right price, I would sell anything. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's not for sale is my wife and kids. But there may be a connection there. I don't know. I never thought about that.
It's unbelievable that you have one of the greatest car collections on the planet, and you were living in one, brother. You are the American dream personified. And what about it is, like, you're just starting. Like, this is the beginning.
Yeah, I'm just getting warmed up. Yeah, and I am so excited for the future.
I could see it. Yeah. You have this energy about you too, and you have this thing that you like. When you, I want to smile.
Like you're a light.
And it's interesting because of the business that you're in too. But everybody, he said another thing here I just want to finish with too, and then I'll let you make one more comment. But he said something about recessions, and I don't know when they are or how they happen. But a lot of you are listening to this thinking, man, I've missed my moment.
No.
And you haven't, right? Because the truth of the matter is, and I'll let you comment on this too, the truth of the matter is that actually what you're it's really good for you right now that you haven't won, because you might have had everything go backwards on you anyway. So the truth is, if you start to accumulate now, you could magnify and multiply your wealth over the next many years, possibly if you do the right things, and a factor that you can't even believe because of what Manny has described here today. So life has not passed all these people by, correct?
Correct, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You feel like if someone's listening to this right now and they apply the things that you've talked about, there's no reason why their drawings can't come true in their life.
I don't want to say it's guaranteed, but if you buy something low and sell it high, you're going to make money.
It's a fact, right?
And there a lot of people say, oh, I can't afford the house. I have no money. Well, get a job, walk into a lender, BofA, Wells Fargo, say, hey, I've had this job for 2 years. How much do I qualify? They'll pre-qualify you. They say, okay, you can borrow a $100,000 home loan. Then you wait for recession. Keep your job. Don't quit. Mm-hmm. You wait for recession. If something drops from $100,000 to $65,000, go write an offer. You just bought a house, FHA loan, 3% down. I'm sure you have enough time to raise your 3% down payment, you know? And that's your first property, goes up, sell it, and you can buy, upgrade to a house, you know?
I think
from a house to fourplex, from fourplex to shopping center to high rises, from high rises to multiple high rises, you know?
Wow, man.
And then you can have your fun with the cash flow, buy a little bit cars, travel, give back, and you know, real estate is the basis of all wealth.
You just described the life of this Iranian dude that I knew that immigrated to the country.
No way.
Yeah. And he's a pretty good guy, too. Like, I like him.
Manny
Clark. Yeah, that's the guy. It was so good, man. I enjoyed today so much.
Really?
And I can't wait for everybody to see this. I'm so excited about it.
Oh, thank you.
You've been like this mystery man on Instagram for so long, and now they've had this poke into your life. And I'm so glad that I like you. You know,
Thank
I'm so glad that, like,
Feelings
I like
mutual.
You. Thank you, bro.
You're a very genuine, humble man yourselves.
So are you, man. Yeah. Thank you. So, everybody, I know you love today. And so I want to remind everybody, one of the coolest things happening on all social media is the two-minute drill that I run on Instagram. And if you're not familiar with it, what it means is every day on Instagram, when I make a post in my main feed, if you make a comment within the first 2 minutes of that post, I pick a winner every day. And those winners get all kinds of cool things. Sometimes it's a coaching call. Would you do a 15-minute call with one winner?
Sure, 100%.
Awesome. So they get coaching calls with guests on my show. Now Manny will do one with you. You can get one with me. You win Max Out Gear. You get autographed copies of my book or Manny's book or other guest books. So it's awesome. Just engage with me. I do it because I want to know what you're thinking and what I can help you with and create content and bring the right guest on for you. Manny was highly requested guest is a perfect example of that. If you miss the first 2 minutes, still make a comment every day because we pick a winner at the end of the week of someone who just comments every day, regardless of the time. That's why I want to engage with you, and I want to reward you too for being a part of the Max Out universe and community, and I want to thank Manny for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much,
brother.
God, man, that was awesome. Everybody, share this. If it's on audio, share with friends. If it's video, maybe go subscribe to the audio version or vice versa. Share this with people that you love and care about. God bless you and Max Out.
This is the Ed Milet Show.